of our interview with Mr. Nathan Snyder, side one, tape two. Yes.
We looked out to the ventilation blinds. This was Friday afternoon. And I understand, I remember that my mother made the regular Shabbos. She made challah and chulen and gefilte fish, not gefilte fish, what we call cut fish, regular mm-hmm. fish, mm-hmm. and soup and chicken and so on, and braten and all that. And everything was prepared in the house. We didn't have a maid at that time. Everything was done by my mother. But I looked out, and as adventurous I was as a boy, in 1941, I was exactly 13 years old. I looked out and I see the Ukrainians going back and forth. They didn't have no cars or jeeps, but they were going and running back and forth. And everyone was armed with a rifle.
Oh.
Or if he didn't have a rifle, he had a tool, a machete, a long knife, a spike or anything. And back and forth and back and forth. And I didn't know, no one dreamed what would happen, but we were in fear. Hmm. And this is Friday night. And we didn't sleep all night. We were all watching the windows. You know, out, off and on, maybe we fell asleep for a couple minutes or so. Saturday morning, we couldn't go to the synagogue. We couldn't communicate with anybody. Because the houses were single houses, not like here, row houses. And Saturday, around 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock in the afternoon, we looked out to the window and we saw Jewish families are marching, are going. Like father, mother, the daughter, the son, and so on. And behind are going two Ukrainians. Then we saw another family going with two Ukrainians. Then we saw another one going. Like everybody is this escort.
Mm.
They're wondering, where are they going? My father says, I don't think that everybody will come after us because I didn't do nothing wrong.
Mm.
And then when he looked out and he sees one of his friends who was a body with him, the same body, in the army, and I will never forget his name is Chubik. He was born, he says, he?
Escorting.
Well, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, he came to our house.
This very same man.
The same man who was my father's friend from the army. And he apologized in a nice way. He says, I'm sorry, I have orders.
Where did he get his orders from? He was just making this up?
Yes. Mm-hmm. He says, we have a new regime now, we have a city hall. Every Jew has to register. And anybody who wasn't a communist, I know you were not a communist, doesn't have to be afraid. And who was a communist is going to be punished, you know, by the tribunal and so on. So you don't have to be afraid, but there has to be registration. Everybody has to register. So my father says, well, look, why do you have to take us? He says, I'm sorry, but this is the way it's supposed to be. I have orders. Must do it. I feel bad, very bad, but I must do that. Going back to that, in the morning, Saturday morning, when we knew something is wrong, my mother took all the jewelry from the house. Right today, I think, will be very valuable, because we had good jewelry many years ago. And she put it in a bag. We didn't have plastic at that time, but we put it in a bag, and then in a box, and she went outside in our garden, in the back, and dug a hole with her hand and just threw it inside.
Mm-hmm.
Then my father had a couple of fur coats, my mother fur coats, minks and so on, because men used to wear mink coats.
Mm-hmm.
They put them in our summer house on the top of the attic. Well, that's goodbye, you never saw it again. Going back to that Saturday, we came out and we wanted to take some clothes with us, food. He says, nothing, you will be back in 5 minutes, 10 minutes, register and come back, don't have to worry about it, don't take nothing with you. So we left last year, we were shirts and pants. My mother, my father, my sister and I. And I will never forget that walk. And as we were walking, we saw from every side, the shtetl had little side streets. From every side streets, from everywhere, families are gone. No one talks to each other, but everybody's sad, scared, frightened, they're pale in their face, they're gone. You know, no one knows. You have to register. The assembly was in a big, big, solid, concrete, brick building, stone building, which was actually the Richthaus, I have to say.
Courthouse.
The courthouse was the only one big, solid building. Because the city hall was a smaller building, which was about maybe a quarter of a mile further down, wasn't so solid. we found out later that about 10 or 15% of the Jewish were taken there, and about 80 to 85 were taken in this building. The reason why they took the others over there, because this was overfilled today.
They must have been bringing them from other communities?
No. Just from this community. Other communities, another faith happened. Other communities, where there are only like 20, 30 families, they massacred the whole family, wife, children, the whole thing, everything. There were only 30, 40 Jews, so they took them to a mass grave and they massacred. No one escaped in the small communities. But us, we were like 250 people, a bigger community. They assembled us. And I remember there was not room enough in one room, big room. The room was maybe the size of this. How could they put in here 200 people? So they made two rooms. And all around, they're surrounded by Ukrainians with arms.
No Germans.
No Germans, no Romanians, no nothing. No Russians, naturally. Some had First World War arms, hunting rifles, machetes, any weapons. They even had what they call, you turn over the earth.
Spades.
Spades.
Shovels.
No, but you grab hay with those forks, hatchets they had, a lot of them had hatchets on their shoulders. So we knew that something is, they don't have to watch us with hatchets. But no one thought that there could be such inhuman cruelty against human. But anyway, we were assembled there in that room. And we waited there. It was 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. Outside we saw, because each window had bars, heavy bars, and they were low so they could look out. And we saw them going around, there were activities, coming and going in two and three. They own our lives. So we didn't know what will happen, but we knew something is not kosher. They said, later is going to be everybody taken to the city hall to be registered. So, at 12 o'clock midnight, the heavy door opened, and one Ukrainian, followed by two in the back, came in with a list and started reading the list. Chaim Feldman and his two sons, Moishi and Yanko, registration. Male. It doesn't matter if he was 3 years or 4 years old. Male. And they took out, they went, another group came in. Schutzmann, Moishi, and his son, no female. Just, and this is the way they went, but they never came back. So my mother, like I said, I made it destiny is to live, to tell the story. My mother had some intuition that something is not kosher. So she threw me on the floor in a position of doggy style, like this.
On your hands and
like
knees.
This. She took off her big shawl. She had a big shawl the woman used to wear. Threw it on me, and she sat down on me like a bench.
Oh my.
And ask also two other ladies. Unfortunately, those two ladies, their husbands went to be massacred, to sit down all three on that bench.
Oh, my.
And I didn't want to, but she pushed my head down and said, sit.
Your father didn't have this feeling?
Nothing. Now, this has happened the last 10 minutes. And we looked around, it was like 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. When we looked around, there were no men anymore, only women. Some were crying and so on. But here and there are a couple of men. Now this is, unfortunately, my father was the last man. So you can see how much he was not wanted. Because when they stopped, they said, oh, that's it. The last one was my father. The man who came to pick him up was a name by the name Sopko. I could be lives now in some place in Canada or in South America, or maybe lives in Philadelphia. A good citizen, protected by the United States Constitution. That bandit, murderer, he came in, Schneider Jakob, and Nathan. So my mother says that I went for it.
Oh, how clever.
Mm-hmm. I'm gone.
How clever.
So he says, all right. So my father took off his ring, his wedding ring, gave it to my mother. And he kissed my mother and my sister. He couldn't kiss me because I was under the blanket. And he left. He says, don't worry about it. He says in German, he says, I have nothing to fear. I'm innocent and I will be back very soon. With the papers, the registration papers. That was the end of it for my father that you've seen the last time.
They were taken to a field and shot?
Well,
is that what you
no one remained in there except from that group, I was the one survivor. One man hid himself between a chimney and a wall. He crawled in, a very thin man. Another one crawled in behind a partition. There were three survivors in this room. Outside, there were a couple more survivors. What happened to them is, it passed about an hour or so, and we had terrible screaming and yelling. Mm. It's like hyenas howling. Oh, and it was actually the cries when they massacred. We didn't realize that.
You didn't realize?
No, but the windows were open. It was in July, in June. We could hear from far away because, well, I was a mile away. So we could hear that. I could hear that, remember, never forget it. I was out from the blanket already because they stopped already to taken out.
They went out, so you...
Yeah, I had, we heard that crying, I had to give out, you know, the pain and the massacre. And then it quieted down at 4 o'clock, the 5 o'clock, the sun came out, and one guy came in, and he and I went under the blanket again. He says, as soon as it gets, tomorrow we will take the woman for registration, and the wife, the woman and the girls, the females to registration, and you will join your husbands. What happened that night is, they did not take all the men together, that carried them like cattle. They took them individual. It was all organized by the Ukrainian intelligentsia, the educated men, the postmaster and so on, like I mentioned before, the son of the
white collar,
the white collar,
the
elite. The, by the way, the
priest
was the biggest organizer. What they did with them is they were taken individually
mm-hmm.
to about a half a mile away
mm-hmm.
to a big, big barn. There they were stripped completely of everything, their jewelry over their head, their clothing, completely naked. And then, individually, they were escorted by two Ukrainians, this is what we're told later, two, maybe one or three, depend, to the place of the massacre. Naturally, they already knew when they were stripped naked where they're going. And that place was, there was already a ditch was prepared. In those days, they prepared that ditch in the bottom of a mountain, which I know exactly where the location is. It's called the Keva. And there, they said to those henchmen, here is yours, do whatever you want to do. The fate of the Jews over there, very few were shot, because they had no bullets. Most of them were hacked to death.
Mm.
Like they say, about a story about the rabbi, they cut his head off, and they spiked it up on a big, big stick.
My.
And they were dancing around like wild Indians over there. Some of them they put in sacks, in cotton sacks, tied the sacks, and as you know, years ago, when they used to grain wheat and so on, they used to have two sticks together. They used to hit the grain until the corn fell out. This is the way they used to beat that in the sack until it was massacred. What kind of my father died, I will never know. But he naturally had a very bitter fate. And the Jews were hacked to death, and they were left over there. One was a survivor from there who has seen all that. That's the reason you know. Apparently, he was hit by somebody who felt sorry for him or
dealing. Are you Ukrainian?
Yes. He hit him and says, make yourself your death, and he fell down in the ditch, and dead bodies on the top of him with blood running all over the place. And when everything quieted down, he ran away naked. He was wounded by the blood. He ran away in a cornfield, and then another town, and they caught him over there, they beat him up, they gave him to the main authorities. He wound up being in concentration camp, survived, and he told the whole story.
Do you know his name, Mr. Snyder?
No. His name was, there were two.
Mm-hmm.
One was Laufer.
Laufer.
Laufer, and the other one was Hecht. Hecht survived.
H-E-C-H.
He was in Israel. Laufer survived. And he came to, he ran about 2-3 miles to a peasant family. And he said, sure. What they did, he said, they will put you in a wagon with straw and take it to the next town. And as they take him to the town, they killed him on the way. What happened is that eyewitnesses told us after the war, and during the war we had also, that they assembled the entire town, all the Ukrainian children, women, everybody had to come like to a festival to watch that massacre. Some of them were crying, weeping, crossing themselves, because some of them were God-fearing. Some of them had a little humanity in them. I would say some of them.
Most not.
Most not.
And this was going on in other towns?
In other towns was going on, yeah, completely massacred. In luckily in here they took only the man and the woman the next night because there were too many. In other towns there were only 10, 20 families, they massacred them the first night. Saturday was the massacre night.
Excuse me, is that this hat?
Bishman. No, this is a brother of his.
But he gave testimony
Israel. Oh yes. So eyewitnesses told us that when they left, like 4 or 5 o'clock in the dawn, the sun started coming up, they left over there, that bloody mess, dogs and were ripping the pieces and running around with hands and pieces of flesh all over the place. What happened is, Sunday morning, the Romanian troops marched in. There were no Germans, by the way. No German uniform, no Nazi, nothing. The Romanian troops, because the Romanians were allies with the Germans.
Yes.
So they marched into our town. And they stopped the massacre.
They stopped them.
They stopped from killing women and children. And this is the reason they're alive today. I understand that the Romanian troops, when they had watched that, when they came to that massacre and seen that bloody mess, as a soldier, he knows he has to shoot and get killed or kill. And even the Germans used to shoot machine gun rather than
hack.
That is a bestial murder to say hacking to death.
Mm-hmm.
The Germans
stopped
it because it wasn't a nice scene as far from human point of view. And they didn't arrest him, but they stopped it. So Sunday, I remember around 11, 12 o'clock, a officer, I don't know what, high officer, could be a colonel or a major, came into the prison.
Excuse me for just a moment.
Yeah.
That terrible night, 2-3 o'clock in the morning, did mother then take you out of the blanket?
Yes,
and
in the
take you back to your home?
No.
You stayed in that building?
Oh, we couldn't get leave
you
from there.
Couldn't?
No, we couldn't leave, but in the morning we felt safer when the Romanian came in.
I see.
And,
I want to ask something. When did you find out what happened? When did the mother find out what
never
happened to you? No, I mean, you didn't find out a day later
no
or 2 days later?
Two days later.
Uh-huh.
Because the first question was, when we asked the Ukrainians who were watching, I said, where are our husbands? Oh, they're fine. They're all going to be registered and you will follow them. So they're going to be registered. Why can't we see them? And we told them, what was this hollering and screaming? And he says, oh, dogs or something. They didn't tell us the truth. But when the remaining came in, he said, you're all Jews and you're all going to be going and relocated in a camp, in a labor camp, where you're going to live and hygiene and this and do make your living and work for our country to victory, to smash the communists and so on. And didn't say nothing to us what happened. And he says, now we have to have a list of all of you who are here. And then a couple of men and soldiers came in. And that day, Sunday afternoon, they allowed all of the women, everybody from that imprisonment, out to go to their home.
I see.
The reason why is gather your belongings, because tomorrow morning, Monday morning, you all have to assembly in front. They have to march, all of us. We don't have no train or trucks or something. We will have to march to a little town called Strojenets or Vizhnets, which is close by. And there you meet with other Jews and we will all take it to a relocation camp. So you will have to be deported. So they let us out. That particular Sunday afternoon let us out. So when we came home, we found the house completely empty. While we were locked up Saturday all day before the massacre, the Ukrainians have ransacked and plundered every single Jewish home to the nail on the wall. We came in, we couldn't find nothing in the house. Nothing. Empty walls. They even ripped out the plates from the stove, you know, this cast iron plate. We looked, my mother went the first thing to look for the back of jewelry. Gone.
Gone.
We looked in the attic for that, those fur coats. Gone. So she found a couple of schmatters. What we found is twill, which they were not interested. I have the twill with me here now. The twill I'm here upstairs. They're already, the leather is getting a little warped. And we gathered together a couple of schmatters we had there. It means a couple of rags for our journey. We did an unknown journey. And we found some challah still. And we took the challah. And next door where that Osterer, with that Baron, Jewish Baron, had his mansion, the Romanian commander too, the Romanian commandment, set up their headquarters next to us. The house didn't belong to us, but there were other Jews who had connection. The Romanian are a kind of sort, they like bribes.
Right.
So a lot of Jewish women had still left some jewelry on them. For jewelry, they promised that they would give us an escort. Maybe they give you two wagons with two horses for the very sick and old, for the little children, because it's a long journey of miles, hundreds of miles. Didn't tell us that it would be deported to Russia or to Ukraine or Transnistria. But one thing we were safe, that no more killing will happen. We have never seen German. Now, in our walk, we couldn't walk too much, just in town, and ask where are our husbands. They said they took them away for labor. Now the answer was they took them for labor. They have to work for the fatherland, help beat the Russians. They took them away in a labor camp. And when we asked the Ukrainians what happened, no one talked. It was like a silence. And the Romanian did not tell us either.
Did mother have some intuition about that too?
My mother and most of the women says they will never see him again. But we never thought that they massacred him in such a beastly way. We thought that they were deported someplace, they're in a camp, labor camp, working, they need him for constructing bridges because it was bombed or something. Maybe one day they will come back, but they never. For the next 2 years, we thought he was going to come back. We never realized.
You never found out about the massacre?
Not after the war, we knew exactly what was going on.
But not for the next few
never
years?
Never kept us in silence. That's right. So
you started the walk then?
Then the next day, we started to walk. I remember there was one wagon with one horse, which they provided. They gave us an escort, two, three soldiers. And Romanian soldiers, or just regular soldiers, walking with us. Well, they bribed them so much that they want to stop, they stopped with us.
Did they give you any food?
No. Everyone had to, this is the reason we assembled, we gathered food that was left in home.
Mm-hmm.
Eggs and vegetable and challah and whatever it is, and jars with water and so on. And then we marched on foot.
How many were you?
Altogether, the whole town. What was left, I would say no more like 75 people.
All women, children, girls?
Yeah, and a couple men. I was one of them.
A few men who
there about two. Yeah, one, and by the way, one hid himself in a cornfield.
Mm-hmm.
It was not brought into the assembly. He survived. So I would say there were no more like 5 men left in this town, alive. And they marched us to a big town, it's called Vashkovitz Vizhnitz.
Could you spell that?
Yeah. It's called Vashkovitz.
W.
It's right here.
Romanian town or a Polish town?
That's a Bukovina town. Vashkovitz is written Vashkautz. Vashkautz.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There is the first time that we saw a camp. It wasn't actually a ghetto, but it was a camp which is close to him with barbed wire, and there were Jews from the survivors from other localities and towns which were left alive.
In Bukovina?
And not in Bukovina, not in that section only, in that little section.
From
not
various parts of Romania?
No, various parts of our little region.
I see.
Yeah, not too many were left, because like I said, in the small places, the whole family, everything was wiped out. We found out later.
This is going toward the Russian border?
No, this was near the Polish border. But yes. But the aim was to, we had to drive.
Drive
us, like cattle. Into Chernivtsi, into the ghetto.
Mm-hmm, I see.
And in Chernivtsi ghetto, what they did is they assembled all the Jews which are remained in the book. After they assembled all the Jews in Chernivtsi, there were no other Jews left in the Bukovina. Those all survivors were in Chernivtsi. In Chernivtsi, they didn't have a problem. But in Chernivtsi, the Germans came in.
Mm-hmm.
So they did their own thing over there. They took execution squad, took them out like a couple hundred to shoot them here, a couple hundred and there, and so on. Not the Ukrainians. Ukrainians would not dare going into a town of 100,000 Jews. See, so the Germans came in because it's a strategic city. It's a big city. So they brought us all to Chernihiv and brought us into to that big ghetto which was prepared. Well, the journey took about 3, 4, 5 days. Some people got sick, somebody died on the road. We made some stopover, we bribed the soldiers. We joined up with other groups coming from other areas. And in the meantime, we were stoned by peasants standing. We had to go to villages on the roads, country roads, so we were stoned by them. That it felt bad that we are still alive. And then as we came into Chernihiv, this is where my sister, my mother's sister lived.
Mm-hmm.
And we headed us into a ghetto. And in that ghetto, we thought that this is it. We're going to survive in here until the meantime, the war. The meantime, the Russians are already not too far from Moscow, as you know, the Blitzkrieg.
You mean the Germans?
The Germans were already advancing very much into the Russian territory. Then they gave us all documents, or better to say, we had to wear first of all stars. Everybody had to wear stars in here and in here. They gave us certain documents that are stamped Jew, the yellow stamp.
The Romanians did this.
The Romanian authorities. The Germans were like supervisors there. Mm-hmm. They were the SS, Gestapo, and so on. And we didn't have too much contact with the peasants over there because this town was mostly by blue-collar workers there in Chernihiv. It was a big town, not like Allentown, I would say, something like that, not like Philadelphia. Then they start to organize deportation with cattle boxes, train. They train to Transnistria, which is across the border in Ukraine. They said relocation to a new land, the promised land. And the way it was going, I will never find it out, because in Chernihiv you also had a Jewish community, which they were dealing and wheeling with the authorities to leave the sick and the wounded, and people tried to bribe not to be first on the list, and it was all really in dealing going on. It's the fate of everyone. And every single day, 1,000 to 2,000 used to leave.
Who drew up the lists?
I think the Jewish community had to give them the list of the Jews, and they selected them they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
They only left behind those who got a temporary, it's called a temporary, but a permanent stay, somebody who was needed for the defense. My uncle, which is my mother's sister's husband,
mm-hmm.
was a textile designer.
Mm-hmm.
They needed uniforms for the war, and he worked in a textile factory. They gave him what we call
exemption
to stay. And he took us in as his dependent, because it's my mother and me and my sister.
I see. So you were then exempted.
Because we lived together in his household.
But his house was in the ghetto?
Yeah. The house was in one room. We lived 10 families, but we had a little corner. This corner was our room. And that we were exempt, so-called. Temporary only, naturally. Mm-hmm. Every day they had transports of 1,500 Jews going down to Transnistria to the concentration camp. And we were staying in ghetto. There was barbed wire all around with Romanian soldiers watching watchtowers, the same like a ghetto. Couldn't get out from there. Food was scarce. But they made, like I said, Jews always know how to survive. They used to sell their pants and their feathers and their little gold and their little this. And
were some of them able to work in the ghetto?
Yes. No, some could work outside because they needed them for defense, like doctors. They need doctors or dentists or like textile or mechanics or specialized in the electric company or
some
skilled people.
Mm-hmm.
They used to be escorted outside with the soldiers and then escorted back into. They could not go free outside the ghetto.
But every day the ghetto was being diminished by the transports.
Yes. The ghetto was diminished every single day, and we had diseases there, and typhus, and dysentery, and fleas, and bedbugs, and all kinds of muckets, you know.
Did you hear any word at all about a possible underground resistance? Was Was there a Zionist?
Yes, we did hear. We did hear that it's partisans.
Partisans.
Outside in the woods.
Jewish.
Jewish partisans, mm-hmm. Russian partisans mixed together,
mm-hmm.
which are fighting the Russian, but we didn't know where, and it wasn't near Chernivtsi. It could have been a couple of 100 miles from Chernivtsi in the forest, because only there they could survive, fighting the Nazis,
the
Hitlerists. You
couldn't, the Chernivtsi Jews couldn't possibly
join.
No,
we couldn't get out
from
together.
Yeah.
I understand that a couple escaped from there under the barbed wire and joined the partisans. While we were there, in if I'm not mistaken, the Jewish community made contact with a Palestine paratrooper who was parachuted to Eastern Europe in Romania, and somehow he wound up in Chernivtsi making contact, not with me, but with some of them. They were all in Hungary.
Our interview with Mr. Snyder, tape 2, side 2. You were saying that you did hear about a parachutist.
Yes.
Through some Zionist group.
Zionist organization. Oh, Zionist organizations were flourishing in the ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
No one talked about resistance.
No.
You couldn't fight the German army, the main army, but somehow way of to escape or put up resistance, not fighting, but putting up resistance. But that was too late. So in the meantime, the ghetto was diminishing. And some of them were taken out for forced labor by the Germans. The Germans to come in and select for forced labor, never came back. We found out the next day they were taken to a bridge that was bombed by the Russians, a big bridge over a big river like the Delaware, which is called the Prut.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to work there. And after the work was over, the Germans took them out and machine gunned them. They just felt like it. So they never came back to the ghetto. They took me to work one day. They selected me because we were registered there. So
you were then 13, 14?
I was 14, yeah, I was 41, 42, 14 and a half. They took me to work, including with some other friends of mine. And they took us to the same place.
To the Prut?
Yes. We didn't realize what happened later, how lucky we were that they stayed. And they had us working in that water, and it was, even if it was in the summer, we were without shelter. The water was up to our neck. We had to lift those heavy iron bars and so on. We were tied with ropes. So they were trying to reconstruct the bridge with those bars. The Germans were watching us, not the Romanians. They were the Germans, and if I'm not mistaken, they were the Germans in the black uniforms. They were the SS. And I saw there, personally, eyewitnesses a execution.
Shooting?
A shooting of a man, of an elderly man, who could not lift. He was incapable. They took him out, and they put him to knee down, and they shot him in the head, because he did not put out production. But we still took life not seriously at that time, because we didn't care. It was like, so what? So they shoot me. It wasn't, the meaning of life didn't have any, life didn't have any meaning at all. So we were used to that, the danger and adventures day by day.
And death.
And death. The next time they took us for forced labor, to clean, what do you call, pitch piles, and a BM in other places, and Russian army camps who were left behind, the remaining troops when they moved in. They took us now to snow shoveling. This was a daily routine. We had to go in the winter snow shoveling every single day. And I liked it because an adventure is to at least be free and breathe the fresh air and shovel snow.
Were you getting any food? Were you
from them? No.
How did you provide your food?
We used to come back and eat. We had dried bread, and some of them we smuggled in food in there, and we ate potato peels and whatever remnants were left, and we betrayed our clothes and whatever we could. And a little bit business was going on there in that ghetto. Jews know how to survive.
And mother, how was she managing with your sister?
My mother and my sister was there back in ghetto, and
you saw them every day.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes. And I was at that time very adventurous. I had a couple friends, and we adventured ourselves outside the ghetto under the barbed wire, which was very stupid at that time because our life was in danger. But as a young boy, you don't never think that danger is close to you, so you forget. What the heck? I remember that we used to go out together, and we met in a place on a little hill with trees, like behind, outside the side of the city, and we used to play cards there. And
this would be after work, or when you were not on forced labor?
But I was not on forced labor.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one friend who was not Jewish. Now, how he was half Jewish, actually. His father was a colonel in the Romanian army. His mother was Jewish. And he was very pro-Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
He came from Romania and settled there in town, his father. And he was very much against what happened. His mother was not in ghetto because she passed as non-Jewish because mm-hmm. she was the wife of a Romanian officer. But he had some Jewish feeling in him.
Mm-hmm.
And I will never forget to this day. He was a very nice guy. We became good friends. We used to meet every single day. His name was Ozio. And he used to say, I'm a Jew too, but my father is a Romanian officer, so who cares? He says, I hate the Germans. And if he wants me to become an officer and go and fight in the war, I don't want to die. He was more like my age, but he knew that one day I had to go to the army. He actually talked me into going to a movie. And that's very funny, and it's tragic comic. To go on a movie with him,
and you had your stars on?
Oh, no. They used to go out under the barbed wire, and we used to take off the stars.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have any papers, documents,
mm-hmm.
as we get caught. But, so one day, he said to me, you want to go on a movie with me? It was a movie play, it's called propaganda movie, Youth Z. Youth Z. I didn't understand this movie until I came into the movie. And I said, but how am I going to go in? You know, they have rajas. Rajas mean they close up places, streets, and they check for papers. They catch me, they kill me. He says, don't worry about it. I'm going to give you a little silver swastika. You put it on in here. And then you get stopped by the SS or the Gestapo. You just say, I agree. And then you go through. My mother didn't know that all the stupid adventures I did.
Of course.
I vented him to the movie, and it happened to me that the movie was a very pugnant against Jews.
Maybe it wind up itself up.
No.
It's okay.
Okay. I remember that when we went to the movie, it was very repugnant because it shows that how the Jews in the monks know that the beard is trying to cheat and rape a German blue-eyed, blonde-haired girl, Aryan, and so on. Actually, after it shown the movie, I remember the people were so instigated by that movie that they stood up all and said, Heil Hitler, kill the Jews, kill the Jews. So anti-Semitic propaganda was that movie. But the movie was to end and we walked out. As you walked out...
No, excuse me, this young friend didn't realize what this would be about,
no,
I suppose.
No.
He meant to entertain you.
Entertain you, yes.
Mm.
What kind of movies did they show at that time? They didn't show a Cowboys movie. No. Those are the movies they show, propaganda movies. But I liked movies all the time. When I was in Chernivtsi in gymnasium, I liked to go to the movies all the time. I was a movie buff. When we walked out from the movie, naturally by the door, there's a Razzia. Gestapo asked me for papers. Oh, I didn't have any papers. But right away, my friend said to me, he had papers, but I didn't. But I had this. He said, when they stop you, right away at papers, what you do is show your color like this and you say, I live. And say, you forgot the papers from me, you are a folk version because you speak German. As a matter of fact, I used to go with short pants and I had very short hair and I looked crew cut, I looked like a folk version. And exactly this is what happened.
Mm.
My heart actually stood still and I did say that and they were suspicious. And my friend says, showed his papers, we figured when we are together and he is Christian, so why will I be a Jew?
Mm-hmm.
So they let us go.
Oh my.
Came home and I told my mother and...
Told your mother?
Uh-huh.
Mother.
And my aunt, and they all said, are you not normal? You're out of your mind? How can you do something like that? You're taking your life in your own hand, you're risking your life. I said, life? I said, that's what life is all about. I'm an adventurer. That's one of the episodes when going together. And the other time, I got caught.
Same, you didn't go back to the movie.
No, I got caught in the street.
What, he used to go out with his friend occasionally?
Outside the ghetto.
I used to go walking on the Herrengasse, it was like Chestnut Street, or Wall Street.
Outside the ghetto.
The ghetto, and walking, maybe looking, see nice girls walking by, a very young woman. And here they closed out the street and they started asking for papers. And I did have that little... This was my security.
You kept it?
Yes. No, I don't know. He had it. Anytime I used to go with him, I never go back and get it.
Oh. So he had it for you?
For me. And they stopped us and asked us for papers. No, we got also another friend of mine, also Jewish. Also, we got both bodies of him. And this time, it didn't work.
Mm.
Papers.
Coffee?
Thank you, no. Thank you.
This time, papers. I did not have papers. They arrested us both.
Mm.
They brought us to the Gestapo headquarters.
They arrested you both?
Both of my friends and me.
Mm-hmm.
I claim that I am not Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any paper. I had white socks, black short pants, and a tuka. I spoke German, and I'm not Jewish. As a proof, I went with our friend is not Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
How dare will I come out from the ghetto being a Jew? And they claim that we are spies.
Mm. Russian spies.
Russian spies, naturally. Dropped Russian spies and Hitler spies. So, they said that you know that we make you talk. So they put us in a cell together. And they, later, us, just as a joke, they made us clean a clogged up washroom with our bare hands.
Oh.
With a bucket, we had to do that.
Oh.
We did it with our hands. And they were standing over with a machine gun that the German SS soldier laughing.
This was a German?
Yeah, it was a Gestapo headquarters. But
mm.
it had a German soldier in there, yeah.
Oh my.
I said, that's the end of it. I said, they won't even deport us, they will shoot us. They got us from the yard and shoot us because we are spies. So then came the interrogation, they called us in and he said, tell me the truth. If you tell me the truth, then we will forgive you. Because you were young, they thought they can blame us. Who sent you? From where are you? And you are spies. You are not folk guys. And you are Russian or Jews, but you are spies. And we claim that we are not. And we claim we are not, and not, and not. And we are folk guys. And there are your parents. Our parents We lost our parents in the war because they were deported by the Russians, and we just left. We traveled from, you know, we have no home, and we just lived with friends. We went back and forth. We gave them what we called Baba Monsters.
And they believed it.
They didn't.
They didn't.
No. In the meantime, our friend, the non-Christian, went, I didn't have a father, went in ghetto, because Christian could go into the ghetto. Jews couldn't get out, but Christian could go into the ghetto. He went to the ghetto to my friend's father. My other friend, the Jewish friend, had a father,
mm-hmm.
who was a good businessman. He used to deal with dollars and gold, and this is what you do during the war, you know,
mm-hmm.
valutin is called, mm-hmm. you know.
Bribe.
You can buy it at the black market. And he told them what happened. He said, Nathan and Bubi was my other friend.
Mm-hmm.
They both locked up in the Gestapo, and they caught him over there, and something had to be done. So he said, you know, Germans don't take bribes. The Romanians, we can bribe, they can sell their own mother, it's not German. So I will try. So he tried the connection. Later I found out through Romanian connection, it didn't work. But my friend, the non-Christian, influenced his father, who was a colonel or a lieutenant colonel in the Romanian army. And he said, here's my two buddies. Now, if you call them they are Jews or they're not Jews, I have no idea. He says, two of my friends are accused friends of mine. Because we came to his house sometime.
Mm-hmm.
He says, my buddies are accused of being spies.
Mm-hmm.
Can you put your influence and so on? All we know is that they came into the cell, they opened the door, and he says, arouse! And out. So we were skeptical and scared because, you know, the Germans used to have a trick. They say, go, and then shoot you in the back. So we came out slowly, without running, and as we came around the corner, we ran like we never ran in my life. We ran for our life. And we never stopped until we couldn't breathe anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Then later we met with our friends, and he told us, his father, we asked his father, how his father did, where he did. See, the Romanians were actually running the country. The
mm-hmm.
Germans were only there like supervising or guests. So apparently he had some influence and so on. And
there's many adventures like that.
Oh yes, oh yes.
Adventure.
I think I was near to death many, many times, and I escaped. And I said, this is my destiny. So that was life in ghetto. And this was going on day by day. I've seen people die, I've seen people getting beaten, I've seen people getting shot.
Were the Romanians in charge of the ghetto, Mr. Schneider? Or
the Romanians.
Romanians were in
charge
of.
Yeah, but there were also
the
some Germans used to walk
some
through.
Some Germans
patrols,
used to walk
yes.
through.
Another incident was another one, which I will never forget. They took us out for forced labor.
Mm-hmm.
Outside the city, we had to clear a road or something. A dam was built there, or a road was built there. It was big boulders and stones, and there were big trucks, and we had to pick up the big stones and throw them by hand into the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a German who was supervising that project. And we were working there, and if I'm mistaken, they gave us one piece of bread and some made from grass, some soup, like at least, because we don't have no food, nourishment, we cannot work, they need us
mm-hmm.
to sleep. And that afternoon, we were marched there by the Romanians, but the Germans took us over. Then the Romanians put us back in ghetto. It was working like combination. A jeep, a German jeep came with two officers, and they stopped, and we didn't pay attention too much, and suddenly they said, line up all of you. In one line. And he walked by and he pulled out every fifth or sixth or seventh.
Shot.
Now, when he started to count, you know, it's something that can go like one side right here, fifth, and then go fifth, and then he can say seven. It's like a gamble, like playing the casino in Atlantic City. And we were looking who's the fifth, or was it the sixth? I don't remember because our heart was then in our pants. But again, we didn't think too much about life or death, because we were all stupid or we didn't care about life. So we were not in panic.
The way an adult might.
Which will happen today, I will have a heart attack. And they took him out. And they took him away for a special Sonderkommando. what we had is later, we had the machine gun fire. We did not see them killed, but we know that they killed them. Why? It was a sport. Like, people go hunting in here, killing animals. There was a sport. It feels like killing a couple of Jews. Now, nobody's going to punish him for that. When we came back to the ghetto, I remember the daughters, the mothers, the girlfriends, the friends used to wait by the gate, and they came back, and they saw that how many events last came back. They told me they don't know where they are. Some of them said, yeah, maybe they're... So they knew that it, but it's a crime, and it was like a mourning, you know, that how come you went out 50, you came back only 40 or 38? So those are the adventures. Again, I said, life has played a joke, actually in my advantage, you know.
Were people still being taken for Transnistria?
Daily.
This continued, what, a year?
If it wasn't every day, it was every other day, or maybe twice a week, but constantly they were taking people. It was a norm that the Romanian had to fill to take out so many Jews. It's according to how many cattle wagons in the train, because you must understand the train was used for transporting troops to the front, bringing back wounded or material and so on, so they couldn't just take all the train sets to the Jews. When they had available some one train, Jews are coming out.
Did you hear anything from people in Transnistria? Did you get any
information? Yes, we got information back from soldiers who came back from the front line, who passed through there.
Romanian soldiers?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
For bribe, they will do anything.
What did they say?
They said what misery they lived there, some are living, some are dying, and we even could send postal packages.
I've read that, yes.
Yes, packages, with a lot of... somebody came on leave from Stalingrad, and he passed through that... You had to pass the town.
Through where?
Transnistria. Transnistria was like New Jersey, a whole section.
Southern Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
So
then he used to say there, look, if you wanted to get gold or money, they will pay you. You go to China, just look up in the ghetto, there my sister.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes some of the packages who were given to them, plus the money and jewelry, never arrived. But many of them received.
Mm-hmm.
See, because there was some human, a good part in the humanity, and you know, as far as soldiers are concerned, maybe they're tired of war, maybe they see too much killing.
Mm-hmm.
And they went back, they gave them those packages, because then they notified them that he did receive that medication and so on. See, we could make more freely because we had contact with the civilized world. They were there more like in a concentration camp in wilderness,
mm-hmm.
Surrounded by Germans and by Romanians with nothing, with poverty, with, like, you know, this is what happened there. They were not in ghettos. They were like, the whole area was a concentration camp.
Isn't that ironic? You call the Jews the ghetto civilized? With the Germans over your head and all that.
Yes,
you know?
Because you could bribe.
Yeah,
you could breed, that's all. There was a couple of weddings in the ghetto. We had a Hebrew school in the ghetto. We had to teach the kids how to read and to say bruches and learn Aleph Beit.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things were going on in the ghetto, you know, weddings and girls used to go with guys and get engaged, fall in love. There was life and death in the ghetto.
Life and death.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Didn't realize what happened in Auschwitz. They didn't know what happened in the gas chambers.
Did you hear the word?
Nothing. Absolutely, we never knew what's happened past that border. What happened in Poland, Czechoslovakia, Austria. Cut off. We did not hear nothing. As a matter of fact, we knew that the Hungarian Jews are the most happiest, luckiest Jews because they were not occupied. They were still free.
44.
So many Jews from who could escape to Hungary.
Some did.
Yeah, you know why? Because we were not too far from the Transylvanian border. Transylvania belonged at that time to Hungary. So they just had to cross Transylvania and they were there. Siget, Kolozsvár, Temesvár, and they...
And some Jews from Czernowitz went into Transylvania.
Yeah, to escape the terror and live a little bit, not under much freedom, but not...
Relatively. So they knew that Hungary was still safe.
Safe until 1944.
Then it was still safe.
Until 1944.
Okay.
This has happened in 1942,
yes.
When they escaped. So for 2 years they had more liberty. Then the fate of the Hungarian was worse than anybody else. But we didn't know what happened in Poland and Auschwitz. We knew there's ghettos all over, but we didn't know that there's massacring and burning.
By the millions.
A million. We didn't know that. Now, one thing we always wished They'd like to see American plane
yeah.
come with paratroopers and save us. They would like to see the American planes bomb. They would like to see some help from the other side.
You
knew
that
Did
you know that America was in the war?
Oh, sure.
You did know that.
Yeah, because the American war 1941, we knew right away.
You did know that.
Yeah, that's, we knew that. Because they were supposed how they used to be
Was
there.
Anybody listening to BBC, do you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you are getting some
they
information.
They got caught, they got shot. We had the real ladies at BBC in England, and it was in German language, so we could, or someone who couldn't understand English could listen.
Mm-hmm.
We knew about American landing in Africa, we knew about that. So this is a long way from Africa to us.
But you had some hope.
We knew about it, the clash in Bucharest was bombed by the American, we knew about that.
You did know?
Oh yes. Oh, yeah. See, the remaining Jews had a different fate. They were more like in Hungary, and other remaining Jews survived, others got killed, but
it was a matter of luck, wherever you
well,
to be.
From what I understand, the Jews in the occupied or annexed territories, as they were called,
yeah.
Bessarabia, Bukovina, fared much worse than the people from so-called old Romania, the basic nucleus of the
right.
country.
Right.
That most of those Jews were saved.
Yeah, they were
actually.
Taken to a forced labor, and nighttime used to go home to their own home.
Yeah.
They used to be beaten, and spit, and sometimes
abused,
mm-hmm. but killed. Some of them were taken out and killed, and so in the beginning. But they were not held in ghettos like we. We were considered commies, we were considered Bolsheviks.
Yeah. Or even foreign because you weren't part of the old Romania.
Right, it was considered foreign too.
Annexed.
Because we were occupied by Russia for a year.
Mm-hmm.
We were traitors. Because the Romanian, and when they came in July 22nd, they all had, every soldier had in here, I will remember that, never forget, armband with a Romanian flag, with a big cross, and it says the war of the Christian liberation or something like that, or in the name of Jesus, Christian liberation or something like that. They came to liberate the world from Bolshevism.
From Bolshevism.
Yeah, so now we are there, the tool of the Bolshevism, the Jews are always blamed, so that's the reason they had so many massacres.
Did you know the name of Antonescu?
Oh, yes.
He was the
butcher, yes.
How about...
Antonescu was the prime minister in Romania while we were in ghetto because Bukovina now belongs to Romania. See, Romania took back Bukovina. The reason why they took back Bukovina was Serbia because they joined Germany fighting the Russians.
Right.
So the German has a gift, says, here's back your territory.
Yes, now
Antonescu
how about...
Antonescu was we heard about him. He was the prime minister or the commander-in-chief of the Romanian
yes.
army.
How about the name of... Filderman was the head of the European, of the old Romanian Jewish community.
Never heard of him.
Who intervened to a great extent in behalf of the Jews in Transnistria. He was a high school chum of Antonescu and used that connection. Also, he threatened economic sabotage of the Romanian economy if Antonescu wouldn't give certain concessions to Romania. You didn't hear that name,
no.
Filderman.
No.
He eventually was taken to Transnistria, but survived the war.
You shouldn't misunderstand. They took some Jews from Romania also to Transnistria, but not from southern Romania, more like in Moldova, like from Iași. They were like in the southern part of Bukovina, closer to Bukovina,
okay.
like the northern part of the old Romania. Some of them, in some locations, they had massacres, pogroms, and they took the Jews into concentration camps to Transnistria. But from Bucharest, from the deep Romanian never.
Mm-hmm.
The Jews over there are left...
Was it just logistic, or were the Romanians protective, or what?
They were more assimilated there. They were more assimilated there in the south with Romanian. They didn't speak Yiddish. They all spoke Romanian language.
Mm.
See, in Moldova was close to Moldova was sandwiched in between Bessarabia and Bukovina. They had influence from East Europe. Zionism was there. More Hasidim. Like we didn't find too many Hasidim or Orthodox Jews in the south of Romania.
Also, I think Antonescu, toward the end of 42, began to worry about a possible Russian occupation.
Russian occupation, yes. And Russian revenge.
Yes.
Yes, but it was too late. I think he was tried and hung.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
So yeah. How long did you stay then in Chernivitz, Mr. Snyder?
We stayed in Chernivitz until 1944, March of 1944. Then the war took a turn,
mm-hmm.
pretty good,
mm-hmm.
and the Russian advanced on all the fronts,
mm-hmm.
and beat the Germans back. And in March, beginning of March, the first or second of March, the Russian entered China.
Were you able to get more food? I understand that in some ghettos people just starved right and left.
Well,
how did Mother and you as children survive? Did she still have things to sell, or were you earning something?
No, my mother used to do a little bit. My mother was a very capable woman,
mm-hmm.
in business.
Mm-hmm.
Surviving too.
Surviving,
yes.
Dealing and dealing. Like she was the commission from selling this to take from that, and she was from nothing making a living to support us.
Mm-hmm. So in March then there was this turn.
And
the
there's
Russians
a lot of more adventures in the ghetto, which I personally now, I need maybe 10 more tapes to go over that, but I would say starting from March when the Russians came in Chernivtsi. As a matter of fact, before the Russians, in 1944, end of 43, when Stalingrad fell,
mm-hmm.
the entire attitude of the Romanians took at a point a different turn.
Mm-hmm.
They were scared.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the Romanian occupation and even the local people.
Mm-hmm.
That the Russians will come back and they're going to massacre them.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did is, in certain occasions, they have opened the ghetto for people who are working steady for defense. My uncle was the one.
Mm-hmm.
Let him go back to his own place.
I see.
That was end of 43. It was like in November of 43, into that home, which wasn't the same home anymore. We only had one room to live, all of us in the same home.
But you were out of the ghetto?
Yeah, but we could not live there too long because it was like scattered. So they headed us into another home about a block away from the ghetto,
mm-hmm.
but it was called also the ghetto, because my uncle worked in the textile mill, the manufacturing day and night blankets and uniforms for the army,
mm-hmm.
and there we survived also by like dealing with my mother, selling whatever we can and so on.
And your uncle was making some income.
Income, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And now we knew already that the war is coming to an end because the Russians were very close. And a week before the Russians came in, all the Armenian authorities took off.
But then Germans stayed?
Germans stayed.
Uh-huh.
The Romanians took off.
Uh-huh.
The Germans took over the city.
Mm-hmm.
Then started another chapter of terror.
Mm.
What they did is, in a sense, they killed a lot from the ghetto. They did their own deeds. Now those who were scattered out in houses like we were, they didn't have any lists, they didn't have any addresses, just by what non-Jews were telling them. There is living a Jewish family, there is living a Jewish family,
mm-hmm.
and so on. But we were prepared for the day that we are liberated by the Russians. Then we saw some American planes coming over, flying over. We knew the war is coming very close to the end, we're waiting for the victory day, for liberation day. And this is happening in March when the Russians came in. I remember 2 days before that,